Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Welcome as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more. Today, we listen to a recording of a panel discussion on innovations in disaster recovery from the recent Disaster Recovery and Resilience Business Forum hosted by BCCI and CNW Business, which focused on key lessons for small island developing states based on experiences from Hurricane Beryl and other disasters. Panelists were Laura Diaz, Associate Manager, B2B CNW Business, and Dr. Nika Archer, Engineering Manager, T&D Assets, Barbados Light and Power, with Patrick Hingson, General Manager of Barbados and Eastern Caribbean Sagicor General Insurance, as moderator. Let's Talk Business is brought to you by Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union Limited.
So Dr. Archer, since we have heard from Laura already and her role within CNW Business, if you could speak a bit about your role and Barbados Light and Power and what you guys are doing on the innovation side, especially as we prepare for, a new set of disasters and what you guys are seeing as well.
So, good. Was it
afternoon?
You know, it's so good to see a topic like innovation and Barbados Light and Power being invited. I know when people think about Light and Power, they think about innovation in the electric bill. When you open your bill, that's the only innovation I want. But I know that's not the topic in the room now. You know, after hearing our director speak and everything, you know that when you open the bill, come the end of the month, you'll be like, oh, I could understand, right? I guess not. And also, our minister spoke about, during the hurricane, people calling angry, mad, etc. People think Light and Power, we have a switch. So before I start about innovation, we do not have a switch that when the all clear given, we press this switch and everybody gets electricity. So everybody understand that now too. So let me come back to MAD. So when next you get MAD during a disaster, I want you to remember our innovation and my abbreviation. You can look at my managing director, probably looking at me like Nika Noel. So M stands for MAPS. Right? A stands for apps, and D stands for drones. Those are the tools, the integrative tools we use during a disaster. So maps. When you think about maps, we get, you have an AMI meter, the meters that we install to accurately bill you so that your bill is accurate, right? So everybody should have a meter. So when we talk about maps, during a disaster, we know who is out. So we have a visualization of that. So we have a mapping application. We can see everybody's out. So that's the mapping part. Then we have the apps. So, just like in all the other business, you go and you do assessments. But these assessments are done through apps. And depending on the context or the type of hurricane or the impact, we could sit in-house and in 30 seconds develop an app to collect data. And the persons go out, so no, traditionally you go do an assessment, you bring back in the paper. No. It comes back in and we see the area that's out and then the assessment to match with it. Then on top of that, how many persons know about the other one that everybody in this room have on their phone? Everybody in this room have the app on their phone? No? ECI Restore? Okay. So Joint ELSA. Yeah, Joint ELSA, that was really, really good. Because of the impact of ELSA, we were not able to go and assess. We have 130 assessors in Barbados. Everybody got a cell phone. So in that case, we were able to take, we have an app. When you download it, which y'all will do before we leave, when you download the app, you could send pictures, see the level of assessment, and we did that from the experience with Maria when we went into Dominica. You had persons mad, as usual, about it taking so long. And it was a situation where it was a real sad situation. You had some employees couldn't get in. Some employees even walked 3 hours from home to work to come in to begin the restoration. So in that instance, they were unable to assess, get to certain areas. And when the comms did come up, what we developed is came up with this app so that customers can help in the assessment. They're able to say things like, what's the extent of the damage? Is my roof off? All those type of things, which is critical to assessment to know where to prioritize. So that's where the apps come in. So now when you leave here, you will download the ECI Restore app, which we are going to revamp somewhat based on the LSA experience and based on the barrel experience. So that's the app, the A. So remember maps, apps, and then drones. We fortunately didn't have to use drones in this instance, but we used drones. Drones allow for rapid assessment. Again, we had some person talk about the humanitarian effort. We helped out with Dominica again with Maria. And this group came in. And drones, again, allow for rapid assessment. So remember the maps. We had a map of Dominica showing the infrastructure before. So then you could take this drone and you could fly it over Dominica, look at the map and see what was there before, because when you went to Dominica, nothing was there. So the drone operation, rapid assessment, allows other persons to help us. So, you know, we could store things in the cloud, you know, where the infrastructure is, all the poles are, and the mapping application is such that you could fly the drone, see what was there before, what is no longer there, and start to do the planning, the supply chain management, and everything to assist with the restoration. What we have at Leighton Power is also the capability, if you know anything about drones, you know, the drones, people have drones for entertainment. When you see drones, you can see whatever on TV during entertainment. We have that facility too. So traditionally with drones, people use the drone, come back in, use the SD card to see what's going on. We have the capability of opening a channel that when the fellows are out there flying the drones, the control center could actually see what's going on. So that's mad. Let me give a little story that my managing director and Johan can probably turn red. So join Beryl, when all y'all were blowing up the managing director phone, blowing up Johan's phone, was the restoration. I was in the office, you know, you could tell my personality. We had the map up and we have a dashboard. And on the dashboard, we will have, okay, this pocket out. This is the assessment. We could restore 3,000 customers here, 5,000 customers here by sending the crews here, another 5. So I was playing, at night I played the game. They're all in there, I play this game. Oh, by the end of the night, we will have 20,000 customers on. Your hand and the manager director's like, oh, she ain't this again. You know, by the end of the night, we had 30,000 customers on. Oh. And it wasn't that I was smart or anything, it was tricking them. Because I know that the crews, we had 7 crews that deployed at Polygon A, B, C, D, and that totaled 30,000 customers. So I would tell them 20, and they'd be like, whatever. So by the end of the night, we were down 30. So I'll be like, no one leaving here tonight, we're not leaving here tonight till we're down to whatever number. And they used to be like, again calls and she here celebrating and what's not. But actually, just coming back, these integrative technologies allows us to assess, we could prioritize as I use in terms of resources, and then effectively restore. Not only effectively, but safely.
Okay. Thank you. So, Laura, one of the things that Dr. Archer mentioned was obviously having stuff in the cloud, and I know many businesses have seen the cloud as a key part of their disaster recovery and being resilient and being able to get back up and running. Along with the cloud, what else do you see from the telecommunications and technology side that businesses are looking at now in terms of building that sort of resilience into their BCP plans as well?
Well, one of the things that a part of the cloud is, of course, that we are always looking for more options, more things that we can work with. And I think one of the things that we have been hearing that everyone is talking about is artificial intelligence and machine learning. So everything that doctor was talking, it's about what data you can collect, everything that you can work apart with the data that you can collect. So in terms of the machine learning and artificial intelligence, what it can provide in case of business continuity and disaster recovery is that they are going to give you input for what it could happen in the future. We know that we are not guaranteed that we can know how it's going to be the weather, how is the climate change, and everything that we can think about it. We are not going to know how it's going to be, but this is going to give us some inputs to see how we can act in the future and not keep doing the things that we are doing bad in the past. So everything that machine learning can be taught about, all the data that you can collect can teach to the machines, to the technology, to start doing some of the things different and start promoting everything that you are not doing in the right way and start making to the stakeholder can do a better decision make in terms of business continuity. And in terms of artificial intelligence, and I believe that some of the other things that we have been talking about and everyone is talking about is about IoT, it's how you are going to make that the technology is going to support the people, the humanity, because this is the final thing that we have to do with the technology. Technology is here in the earth just for us, for how we are going to make things easier for us. So with IoT, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, you can have a full package that you can host in cloud if you want it, about what is all the information that you can work with. IoT can give you, in terms of sensors, different things that you can add in the island to see if a disaster is coming up, if something is weird in the environment, and you can act before something even worse could happen. So I think that this is the three main things, a part of cloud, of course, that we can think that can support in terms of disaster in general, and not just natural disaster. It's going to be in general also.
I mean, Dr. Archer, you mentioned, you know, lightning power is over 100 years old, and innovation and lightning power may not, those two words for many of us may not go together, but I mean, what are some of the technology? I know you mentioned the maps and the drones. I mean, what are some of the other things that you guys have implemented or thought about, if you can say, to help with your disaster planning, to help with your resilience, to help with your recovery, along with some of the other things that you mentioned earlier, if you can.
Another thing we've been thinking about is using the weather, how we can use weather better. Using the model from the hurricane, I think the Met Office will have that, to say, well, based on how the weather pattern, I know we can't predict it 100%, based on the weather, whatever characteristics of that, when that comes over lightning power, given that we know the integrity of our poles, the status of our grid in terms of the trees, we're going to hear about the poles and everything, what is the expected level of damage so that we could do our response. That's what, you know, looking to get to the next 2 to 3 years, because it's indeed possible. It takes understanding a lot about, believe it or not, it takes about the different layers of the soils, the flood-prone areas, and certain other things. And that brings me to the point of undergrounding. People think that the answer to resiliency is undergrounding. It is a good option, but there are other implications for undergrounding. Number one, you know, the flood prone areas. The underground infrastructure sits on the ground. Like, you have the cable is below ground, but the underground infrastructure, the transformers, the switches, those sit on the ground. And as Johan spoke about the supply chain, for that type of equipment, the lead time is a lot longer than things like a pole. So I just wanted to mention, because sometimes people automatically think that if we underground all of Barbados, that it is the only solution.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the audience? Any member of the audience have a question for the panelists? Go ahead, Ruth. We have two questions.
And I think the two companies dealing with the most challenging aspects on the early days of the response are the communication and power. One of the main difficulties we face when we are operating, providing solutions, is to restore communication and also collect the data from the affected areas. On your experience, on your investigations, on looking for the future, do you foresee any easy and cheap solutions for the communities that can be used either to restore their capability to have light or power, but integrate on communication, like something on cell phone, work with, while there is no network, that immediately after any type of connection during a day, we can compile data and, for example, make a map where the population is. Numbers in islands in the Caribbean, for example, we are not affected by Barrow this year, but in some of the islands affected, the numbers on who is there or how many are still there is really something difficult for us. So any idea in innovation on towards that direction to map the population or to restore their capacity to have power immediately after or as fast as possible?
Well, the reality is that in CMW we are not looking for that kind of solutions for these type of disasters. There is no closed door that we cannot check if there is any opportunity, for example, in terms of you can bring up an infrastructure in a container that can solve these kind of issues. This is something that we are always looking for, trying to build up new solutions for these kind of things. Anyways, what we always guarantee or what we always try to guarantee is has an infrastructure in each of the country. Here we have some data centers that can support these kind of things, and the idea is that we have some SLAs that we are guaranteed the time, the downtimes that we are going to have, that ideally should be less than 4 hours. So how we guarantee that the country is still in contact if there is any disaster, natural disaster that take out most of the part of the country or something very worse happen, is that we always guarantee and we always try to guarantee that the communication path is up and running. So for this reason, we think in how we build up the business is that we always have two different paths to communicate outside of the island. This is not going to be just here in Barbados. It's going to happen also in the other island where we have the business. And when one of them is shut down, we are start all the process internally to come up for the communication in the other part. And if nothing of that is working, we also have our mobile network that is going to support that, that you are going to have the guarantee that the country is not going to be isolated and that you can communicate between the different countries that are in the region. And we also have the good thing in our company is that we are not just communicated within the Caribbean, we are communicated with the US, we are communicated with Panama, with Colombia, and we are trying all the time to guarantee that the communication is always up and running. So this, of course, is the ideal to you can start checking how you are going to solve and how you are going to make that the things is that your country is not going to be isolated with no support to work on. So I think that, as I said, we are always open to check if maybe in a container we can check a possibility for a main disaster, but the way that we guarantee the communication is that we always have different protocols to guarantee, of course, that everything is communicated.
Thank you.
Just to add, sorry. I just wanted to add to the answer there. I think your question was around what visibility we have of people across the country or across the island. Yeah. So from two perspectives. First of all, in terms of our terrestrial network, so our fiber networks, well, in Barbados, it's primarily fiber. We do have mapping systems of all the homes that we've passed and where we're delivering services to. So we understand across the country where those homes are, how many people are, well, receiving services from us in those areas. So from the terrestrial standpoint, we do know that. From the mobile standpoint, we also have systems in place to understand how many people are connected to each of our cell sites.
So as long as self-service is up at a cell site, we do know how many persons are receiving service there. And that gives us some understanding of where population centers are, where people need service, and where we need to restore service as a priority, right? Yeah.
Thank you, Sean.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, in 2024, we still have an extensive infrastructure in terms of the electrical and services that are on wooden poles. What is the intention, given that we are now in an age where the category of hurricanes are increasing, and at some point in time we will be impacted? So what is the long-term plan by the Barbados Lightning Power? Because I appreciate that Flo and the other provider have services on those poles. So what is the long-term plan as it pertains to that type of infrastructure in terms of the vulnerability that we find ourselves in, given the increase in the type of hurricanes that would be coming this way?
Okay, I could take that one. That's actually asset management one. The poles, when coming out to the Dominica experience, the class of the pole actually tells you the level of the hurricane that we could withstand. So a pole is not a pole. So if you look at your pole, you will see the 30, 35-foot pole, the ones that offer service to your house, are a different diameter than the poles on the main road. So the wooden pole itself is not a problem. It's the class of the pole. They have up to H1 poles. And when we're talking about Category 5, I could plainly say that most poles will make it. Right? But the diameter of the pole gives you the ability to withstand. So right now, we can withstand about a Cat 3 with the diameter of our poles. The ability to withstand also depends on the loading on the poles. Previously, before we had Flo having copper, now with the shift to fiber, it's lighter. So that means that we can withstand a greater category with that diameter pole. So to answer your question, there are poles in the industry, a pole is not the problem, there are poles in the industry up to H1 that can withstand higher category hurricanes, but certain categories, there's no pole in the world that can withstand it. So hopefully that answers your question. We were previously class 4, we now move to the class 3 pole.
I think his question may be around, and I know Roger won't answer this one, if Lightning Power moved to concrete poles like what you see in the US, and is that a better solution than wooden poles? Would a concrete pole sustain a Category 5 versus a wooden pole?
No, because it depends. Again, you see, the wood, it's not the wood versus the concrete, it's the strength of the pole. So the wood pole, you will have an H1 wood pole that can sustain whatever category. The concrete pole will be based on the same science as the wood pole in terms of the strength of it, if that answers the question. But the uptake of the concrete pole, one of the challenges we have with the concrete pole is the vehicular accidents. You know, the impact, imagine the impact of a vehicle on concrete. So that's one of the challenges of moving towards concrete that we're looking at.
I just want to be sure, because I understand what you're saying, mm-hmm. but the reality is the reality that we are facing higher category hurricanes. And I think for all the businesses in here, we do understand that critical services have been put on the ground. Long term, what is Lightning Power's plan? Because in successive years, you've reduced your crew sizes, so that means you have to bring crews in from other countries to supplement what you have here to get those poles or services back in place if we are significantly impacted here in Barbados. So is that the plan, that you will bring people in to get things up and going, or are you looking to change the category of your pole? Are you going to a more high tensile type structure where you're going to have your transmission cables on that and a different distribution? What is the long-term plan? Because
in 2024, there is just too much of a pose that not only leaves us vulnerable, but I dare say the houses that are next to these poles also become vulnerable. So what is the long-term plan?
Johanny, well, come on. Help me answer this question? Or you want me to go ahead because you think I'm better poised to answer the question?
I think Roger want to answer that.
Sorry. Yeah.
Hello? Sorry, before...
Roger's going to answer that.
I don't want to
interject really quickly. My ADHD is playing. Excuse me. We had spoken... You had spoken briefly about underground, putting networks underground, and the challenges to that being the switches and the connections will be on the surface and subsequently vulnerable to flooding. Why not put those switches on poles?
The switches on the poles?
The switches on the poles.
The weight of the switches, they can't go on the poles.
To my imagination, for what I understand, there are a lot less switches than there are actual poles existing. So one switch would handle area of what, 5,000 residences or 5,000?
A switch?
Yeah.
No, the switching doesn't quite work like that. So the switching is like...
Or the transformers.
The transformers.
The transformers were also on the surface. So wouldn't it be a possibility, sorry, my ADHD again, to put said transformer or switch on a reinforced tower that could handle the weight and have the network, the actual infrastructure run underground, would get away from the challenges that, or threats, as the gentleman said, of the poles relying on wooden poles. I know there'd be a greater expense to the actual trenching and those capital works, but wouldn't it be much safer that way? Sorry.
Roger, you want to come before I answer? Because we're getting into transformers, underground transformers on poles.
both, thank you for the questions. Both of them are related. In terms of plans, so some were mentioned by our director of operations earlier. Over the last, I would say, decade, quite a large number of changes have been made to the network to improve on resilience. The undergrounding is a big one. So 60%, or just over 60% of the transmission network is currently underground. And that has happened deliberately over the last few years to increase the resilience. The going underground is not a simple matter for a number of reasons, and Nika mentioned a few, but a big one is cost. And similarly for poles and the types of poles used. So there's a business assessment that you need to do, and you need to look at the impact on rates and electricity rates. So undergrounding is typically at least six times the cost of overhead. And so you want to target that for very critical infrastructure. If you did it right across the board, like 100% of distribution, it would drive electricity prices through the roof. And that's why very few utilities in the Caribbean have done that, and islands in particular rarely do that. And even in North America, you see the big steel pylons and structures, and their substations are all outdoors. There's nobody really with indoors. So there's a balance that you have to strike, and so it's really about prioritizing. And that's what we've done over the years. We've put all of the substation indoors. Over time, we spent some time doing that. The last, there are 18 substations, and as the Director of Operations indicated, there's one that's halfway in, will be completed within the next few months. So all the substations indoors, a good proportion of the transmission, which is the backbone of the network, underground. As Dr. Archer was saying, what we've done is increase the class of the poles. And so as we change poles out going forward, we're going with higher class poles that can withstand stronger storms. So I think you mentioned Category 3 and Category
4. Yeah, the question was what concrete versus wood.
No, we've looked at concrete. The challenge with concrete is, again, similar to undergrounding, the cost and the impact that it will have on prices. So it is a trade-off. As things get more intense, you have to trade, you know, the business interruption costs, you have to factor in versus having that infrastructure in place. But wooden poles are actually very resilient once you use the right class of pole for the application. And so what our plans are at the moment is to continue building on the resilience, increasing that. We've adopted an increased class of pole that we're implementing. The construction standards was mentioned earlier. When there's an event, what you tend to find is that the wires get torn off of the pole because we use a construction standard called binding wire. That's a little bit different. Everyone doesn't do that. But what it means is basically how the wires are fastened to the poles, and the insulators or the poles are in such a way that if galvanized or a tree branch or a tree fell on the wires, it would rip the wire off of the pole as opposed to tearing the pole down or the wire dragging the pole down. So that's a construction method that we've put in place. So those are a few of the measures. Another key part of resilience would be the technology that we implement.
Today we listen to a recording of a panel discussion on innovations in disaster recovery from the recent Disaster Recovery and Resilience Business Forum hosted by BCCI and C&W Business, which focused on key lessons for small island developing states based on experiences from Hurricane Beryl and other disasters. Let's Talk Business is brought to you by Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union Limited. That's it for another edition of Let's Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Join us again next time as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.